Welcome to Focus on Business, a podcast show for photographers with me, your host, Jane Goodrich. I'm talking to successful photographers so you can learn from our experiences and have the business of your dreams. So join us and let's focus on business. So welcome to today's episode of Focus on Business podcast. And I am very honored to have Darcy Benincasa on the show today. And if you haven't heard of her, you should, because she's a world-renowned international wedding photographer. She's also got a podcast, Play It Brave. It's an amazing podcast. Check it out. And also she's like me, well, maybe not like me, but she's a leading expert in marketing, mindset, and motivation for photographers and creative entrepreneurs. Welcome, Darcy.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and sort of how you got into photography.
Probably like most of the listeners, I really just always kind of had the passion for art. My grandmother was a painter. So when I would go over to her house, she'd be painting all these beautiful things. And I really started to take up painting. And then I thought, this is really time consuming. I'm going to just make paintings with this thing called a camera. And it really set in when I moved to Paris at the age of 20. And I just didn't have a lot of friends there. And I was building like a life there. And so I would just take my camera out every day. At that time, it was all film shooting. And I would take a black and white roll of film. I would shoot it for the first few hours of the day. I would drop it off at this 1 hour development place, pick it up all in print. And from there, I just really started to develop this feeling of just documenting my life and capturing and looking at things and architecture and all of that. So I did it for a hobby for years. And then I finally decided to turn it into my career in 2008. And then I legit started my business 2011.
Wow. And you started in wedding photography or did you venture into wedding photography?
I started right into weddings. I had a good friend from college. He was very well known, Jonathan Canlis. I was in the very first wedding that he ever shot. I was a bridesmaid. And I watched his business just explode over the years. And then I was living and working in Switzerland, making a little extra money and was like, I really want to do this. So I took his workshop in 2010. And that's when I was like, okay, I really want to do this.
Okay. So you like your journey is like hobby, but then you look at people. I mean, it's interesting because you look at someone you knew from college and you'd met doing his job and then you took a workshop. So it's invest in the education so you don't make the mistakes.
Oh my gosh. Everybody should invest in the education. His was a couple $1,000s in 2010. And I remember the third day of the workshop, he took us behind the scenes and showed us the money he was making from print sales alone, which was over six figures. I was a school teacher at the time making $50,000 a year. And I died. I had no idea that you could make that kind of money being an artist. And he was so real and open and he showed us all the numbers. And, you know, his business was grossing like six figures in prints, multiple six figures in sitting fees. And he really taught me a lot about pricing. He taught me a lot about posing. That workshop changed my life. And I was able to kind of go out and start shooting weddings. I went hard. I hustled really hard at the beginning and just, but I was so into it and I was so excited. And it was still not as hard work as I was doing teaching 48th graders how to put on a musical. So this is way less hard than what I'm doing and it pays much better. And I think because I was older when I went into photography in my 30s, I just took it really seriously and started making money right from the beginning because I need a job. I have a mortgage, like all of these things. I don't have a partner who makes money. So I've got to be really, really savvy here.
So how long were you working as a teacher and your business or how long did that take?
So I shot my first wedding in 2008 and then I just started shooting little things here and there. And then I quit to go full-time 2013. I was not shooting a lot. I went and worked in Switzerland. I just kind of was all over the place. But I really opened up the business 2011 at the very end. Mm-hmm. And then I quit my day job in 2013 in the summer. And I was making $3,200 a month take home. And so I set a really big goal for myself with going full-time photography that I would have 10K months. And I set it in my mind. I did a lot of mindset work around it. And within 30 days, like I had made 12K. And then I kept eating that again and again. And it was really, yeah, it was really incredible. I still was like, oh my gosh, what do I do with $12,000? This is 3 months
for
as a school teacher. This again was back in 2013, but it was incredible.
I think that's actually really interesting. We have a lot of listeners that are just starting out their business. And so I think we think that, hey, I can just go quit my day job and be a photographer. It takes a while. So in between, while you are not putting words in your mouth, but like from 2008 to 2013, you've been taking workshops, you're building your portfolio, you're sort of building up your business. And then you knew you were ready to go full time, right? Is that
you're never going to feel ready to go full time.
Yeah.
you're always going to feel really scared to leap. I would say I really focused hard on it in 2011 and 2012. I worked the weekends. I started building myself a website. I started doing the styled shoots. I understood where I wanted to niche down. There are a million creatives in my community. We started working together. So I would say it was like 2 years. I am a big believer in not stressing yourself out too much and having some systems in place. And they're very doable. The awesome thing about photography is most of it takes place on the weekends anyway. And I had the weekends free. Plus, as a school teacher, I had summers free. So I went to Europe and did a lot of styled shoots. And I just built a lot of content and a lot of stability. But I still didn't have like regular money coming in when I quit because I just couldn't until I could devote full time to it. But I knew in my gut, like I was like, I just knew I wasn't going to fail.
Yeah, but you sort of had your pricing set profitably for when you were ready to go, your website built, and a lot of shoots, it sounds like, a lot of content.
The content is the most important part. And I really understood what my ideal client wanted. So because I saw a lot of people creating content, but they were with neighbors or people who weren't actually the aesthetic of the person that you were trying. And I made that mistake at the beginning, which I think is okay because I was just learning how to pose people and work with people. Yeah. But then I got really clear on what an ideal client for me would look like, how they would dress. And so then I started building that. And I did 2 big shoots in Europe with an amazing stylist that really put me on the map. And then it just kind of started blowing up from there.
That's amazing, sort of knowing your ideal client before you launch, right?
Yeah, you have to, because I've coached a million photographers and I'll see some go for like all these boho kids in ripped jeans on the mountain giving piggyback rides. They don't look like they have money to me. So they are not my client. Like mine are lawyers and doctors. They're much more traditional. They're usually New York business people, or they're, you know, a lot of mine come from Ivy League schools, and then they refer me to other people. And so the referral network is also really important too.
I had done a lot of work on my ideal client, and I just know that my ideal client is a working mom because I'm a family and newborn photographer. Mm. And I just know it's a working mom, and I just tailor everything to them. You tailor your website messaging to it. So it's really key.
Yeah.
I love that. If you had to travel back in time, would you do anything different of how you got to where you are today?
I would have done SEO a lot sooner. A lot sooner. But one thing that I did, but then I learned really quickly, is sometimes everybody wants to like go for the top planners and the top vendors when they're still a little fish. And so people are like, how do I get these big people to notice me? You don't. And so I learned that. And what I did is I started really building people who were in the same level of career space as me. And we really grew together. And then within 4 or 5 years of really hard work, we were up at the top. And I do think that that is something that people need to realize, because the people around you, starting with you, they're going to hustle like you do. They're going to collaborate. They're going to put their heart and soul into it. I still to this day sometimes don't like to work with people who are too famous, because they don't need to achieve, or, and I'm still very much an achiever, and I want everything I put out to be innovative and new and make people think. And so I sometimes still like working with people who are new, because they just hustle harder and they want it more, you know?
You know, I've been doing this 14 years. I have my contact. I call them my business besties. Yeah. I have my friends. Or if you're a photographer, I have a friend who's a boudoir photographer. She has her hair and makeup person.
Yeah.
Now they're best friends basically now. So it's weird. So it's just find a different one and then find somebody that's sort of in the same career journey as you. I love that. You're based in New York now, but you travel all over, right?
I'm based in three main cities, New York, Paris, and Park City, Utah. That's where I've marketed all my work.
Okay. So I was going to say, if you were to move, which is, you know, what would you do?
Yeah. But I know a lot of people are moving, you know, and they ask me this, oh, I've got to start over. It really does come down to, so I'll give you an example. When I moved to New York and I was still kind of at the beginning of my career, I went into Barnes & Noble when they still existed, and I pulled out the five latest wedding magazine publications from New York State and New York City, not nationally. And I looked at every shoot, and I wrote down the people who really aligned with me, florists, planners. I started following them on Instagram. I started making connections. I'm a big believer that you don't just go in and ask, hey, will you refer me to whatever? Like, you've built that relationship. And I started building those relationships. And then with one of the people, she referred me to this really intimate wedding vendor party offered by Zola, who's really big in New York City. Mm-hmm. That I can't believe it, but I got on the invited list. I was just, and at that place, I made so many amazing connections. So for me, I would connection build first. You can always do SEO. Yeah. You can always blog post. Like, there's a lot of marketing things, but for me, it's know who's in your area, understand how you can appeal to them, understand how you can serve them. And so, yeah, that's what I did. And that really got me going in New York City and just really helped build my reputation.
You want to be in those magazines yourself too. So it's exactly like aligning with versus just doing a Google search of florists in the area. It's like, okay, well, who's getting their
who's
work
actually getting published?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. When we talked about connections, we briefly touched on SEO. And marketing is huge. So, but if you had to say, I couldn't live without this form of marketing, what would it be?
It really is the publications. They're harder now. They used to be easier, but I still regularly get featured on all the major blogs. You can get into Harper's Bazaar magazine. That's huge. Vogue, like when you can get any of that, that is what is called social proof. And when people come to your website and they see I have been featured on all these places, it gives an elevated feeling to my work, and it gives them a place where they trust me. They can click on this, they can see my spreads. And so I actually, if your listeners have no idea how to do that, I actually have a really great publication guide. It has the names of the editors. It has how you write up the story. It has story templates, all the things to get you published. And everybody who goes and takes it learns how to get published. You have to have the good images to back it up. But once the images are there, the work is there, the talent is there, then you want to really get published because it just builds your reputation faster than anything.
That's amazing. We will definitely put that in the show notes because it's key. Plus, as you mentioned earlier, SEO, it does actually help getting a backlink from one of those places too.
It does. The feature in Brides changed my wedding career. And if people want to just go right to my Instagram and just DM me the word submit, it will send it right to them. It's super easy.
That's amazing. That's amazing. We'll put the Instagram in there too. Okay. So wedding photography is very on the weekends primarily. How do you manage your work life? Is there I outsource my editing or I have to do my editing? Like, what does a week in the life of Darcy look like? If there is a typical week?
There is pretty typical weeks. I like a routine and a schedule when I'm not on the road. When I'm on the road, it's a free-for-all and I just live my life as decadently as I want. So I do now have an editor who is exquisite and amazing. That was not always the case. So I have gone back and forth. I had a really good editor and then she went on maternity leave and then decided to just not work again. And so then I took it back to myself. I shoot film and digital, so I always just edit my film first. It doesn't really need to be edited, but I, you know, straighten everything, look at it, and then I match my digitals to that, which the editor that I have now is amazing at that. So will just do the film and then send her the digitals and she'll match them. And that's really good. As much as I can get off my plate, I am mostly still a film photographer because I don't want to be sitting behind a computer. Once you shoot film, if you get the lighting right, you get those things right, you don't have to do all these different things. I have gotten really into AI lately. remove distractions, remove speakers. I've used AI a little bit to do some other things, and that's been a really fun thing to use. I know some people are on the fence about it, but I think I just want to be in the know. Yeah, but I outsource a lot of things, and I work basically Tuesday through Friday until Tuesday through Thursday from 8 or so till 4. And then Friday, I'm off by noon. And Monday's always my day off, especially if I'm working Saturday. So I still make sure I have a full day off to run my errands, live my life, do my thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely think that making sure that you have a day off somehow, you know, I'd love to say that I had so organized, but if you are working the weekends, you should take Mondays off.
Monday,
you
know, like a better day to take off than Saturday. Yeah. Everybody's taking Saturday off. Everything's busy. Monday, nobody's there. I can grocery shop in peace.
Like, it's amazing. I remember when I waited tables during college, just over the summer when you didn't have school. Yeah, you'd have Mondays off because it was slow. And
yeah.
You'd be like, I can get everything done. This is amazing.
Very European.
Yeah, very European. Yeah. So you have three different places that you live. Maybe there isn't as much seasonality in your business, but weddings, usually there is a seasonality to the business, right? When the weather's somewhat not freezing outside. Or do you notice, do you have a season to your business?
Yeah, I don't really work December through March generally.
Yeah.
So my season usually kicks off in April. So it's kicking, my first wedding of the year is April 6th in Paris. So I will be in Paris about three times a year. And then I'll book all my other jobs then too, because I do branding shoots and things like that. And so I just kind of let my email list know, let my people know. In fact, I email at the beginning of the year, all my past couples, and let them know my travel schedule, because sometimes they want to come to, if I'm in Italy, they want to go get a shoot in the Amalfi Coast, or, you know, I have people come back again and again for their anniversary shoots. I always fill up Paris sessions with couples who just mostly see on Instagram that I'm going to be there, and they DM me like, when are you there? We want our Paris experience. And
that's
and
amazing.
Things like that. Yeah.
I think that's actually very clever. You probably book out at least a year in advance, but then you know your travel schedule, and then your past clients, maybe they are in Paris, or maybe you shot them in Paris. You can fill up your schedule with friends. I mean, by the time that, you know, you see them again, it's like, oh, it's a year in, it's fun. And I love that idea, because a lot of wedding photographers, I don't follow up with them. Why? Don't you follow up with them? It's
fun. Yeah. I love your work. When I work in Paris, I'll make 35K in a week through shoots, through brand shoots, engagement or anniversary shoots, and through weddings. So if I have a wedding, then I know I'm going to be there a week before and maybe a week after. And then I fill the calendar according to that.
That's amazing. So we chatted a little bit about ideal client. So if you have an inquiry, or what is a red flag where you're like, you're not for me?
Yeah, I've had a few. It's usually if they want me to filter everything. So some people these days really even want me to, they're like, can you put a filter on your camera, or how much retouching will you do to me? The thing with film is it already softens everything. It softens your wrinkles. Yeah. It softens those things. So I tell them that, but I had one potential bride, I did not book her. She wanted to see regular day photos of my brides and then how I shot them on the wedding day. And she loved it. She's like, you make them look so much prettier. But everything on her Instagram was heavily filtered. Like, she didn't, like, who she was on Instagram and who she looked like in real life were not the same person. And she wanted me to enlarge her eyes a lot. And I was just, I'm not doing this. No.
That's a lot.
It was a lot. It was a lot. So, and then I have had a few brides who have really low self-esteem, like they really don't like themselves. And I know they're not going to like their pictures. And it's not a me thing. It's a they don't like themselves thing. So there was one bride, she hated her engagements, and they were stunning. Like, and she was beautiful. She just had body dysmorphia. And I don't want to shoot your wedding. I think you need to deal with somebody else. She had a lot of issues, and I didn't want to, I knew I wouldn't please her, because nothing was pleasing her. So those are kind of red flags.
That's actually interesting, because you could actually get a red flag from the engagement shoot and their reactions to the shots. Or I think as a you know, wedding photography, I would definitely do engagement shoots to see.
You see how they are. One groom and I did shoot his wedding, but he yelled at me so much at the engagement shoot. I was like, whoa, this is an insane person. I was locked in to shoot their wedding anyway, but I was like, okay, but I knew how to handle it better. I knew what triggered him and I knew what was setting him off. And so I adapted. And so the wedding was much smoother, but yeah.
I have a lot, I mean, family photography, I have a lot of repeat clients, and I know I have the dad that, you know, is like, Jane, you have 8 minutes. And I'm like, I know you told me I had 8 minutes. Like, fine, I have 8 minutes with your kid. But like, you, at least I know what I'm walking into.
Yeah.
You know, I don't actually think it's a red flag. He's nice during the 8 minutes, but then he had to leave because he was going to work.
Yeah.
Then I had fun. So tell us about a funny shoot, like that you've had, or the best shoot that you've had, or something that you're like, I could not believe this happened on a shoot. You would never believe it. You probably have a lot.
Oh, I have so many. So I got really big with this group of family and friends in another country. I'm not going to say the country because if they listen to this, I want them to love me still. But I got a bulletproof car. They shut down the city streets. At the engagement party, there was probably like 20 drones overhead of paparazzi. They were like 900 people weddings. I have photographed almost every sibling of this, their cousins, all of it. I became like this hot commodity because I could get the weddings published. So they literally would bring me and my team down, but then they would have their own team too that would take all the guest photos. So my whole job was just take the shots that would get published. And it was such a pressure off of me having to try and run around and get all the guest photos and get people happy. And I just got to work totally on the Vogue, the flowers, the flat lays, the bride and groom. These weddings were just in the most exquisite locations and just the best party. Every reception, they would have a new theme and they would bring out big performers. And it's the only weddings at the end of the wedding where I drink with them, you know, because I'm just like such a part of the team now. And they'd fly in bartenders who were really famous and it'd be flipping drinks. Everything was a feast for the eyes. Every photo I took was amazing. Everything was so fun. Kindest people, but they know how to throw a party. And it's so fun. And it's a big old party. Yeah, it was. And I just really felt like I became part of the family because I would go down 3 times a year to photograph for their cousins, their friends. Everybody started booking me. And it was just awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, when you have the bulletproof car to pick you up, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay.
It was not the safest country. And during one of the weddings, a civil unrest came out and we had to stop the wedding at 2 p.m. and all of us had to go back home. And then on my balcony, armed guards were running, shots were being fired, explosions, the Delta flight. I was supposed to fly out 2 days later. It moved it up there. Like, we're getting you out of here now. Wow, this is an adventure. I will not tell my parents what's happening right now. They would freak out.
Did you get all the shots? That's what I'm thinking. Like, what happened?
We sped the wedding up. So instead of getting married at 4, they got married at 9 a.m. and went through. So I got all the cathedral shots. I got all that. And then we did the first dance and everything. And then I had to be whisked away. So don't know if we got a cake cutting. That's the one thing I don't know. And we didn't get any like night shots. So I hate like flash and stuff. So I got to shoot an entire wedding in complete daylight and be wrapped by 2. It was crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Talk about a story for a wedding day though. Like, oh man. Like, I mean, it's the Alanis Morissette song, like rain on your wedding day. That's taking it up a notch.
Civil unrest on your wedding day. Like literally. Crazy.
We're getting close to wrapping up, but what is the one tip that you would give to a new photographer starting out?
There will be nothing that you do more important than your own innovation and your own creativity. Do not copy your peers. Do not look at the big photographers and do exactly what they have done. Don't borrow the same dresses, use the same models. It serves no one and it just makes you look like a copycat and everybody can see that you're doing it. Find your own models, be creative, look for inspiration, go, you know, look into things that are not wedding related to look at things. Like I just watched the movie Poor Things and the costume design just won an Oscar. And I was just looking at so much of the design in there and getting inspired for my next Vogue editorial that I'm doing in Paris. And so find inspiration outside of the wedding world. Do not copy people. It's not going to differentiate you. And that's when everybody's like, it's a saturated market. Yes, it's saturated with everybody who looks the same because they're not using their own creativity and innovation. And just have so much fun with that and take risks with it.
Yeah. And like you can find inspiration anywhere, right? You can look at artists, you can look at painters, you can look at, and anything can inspire you. It's not just looking at other photography.
Yeah. Right? Nature.
Yeah. I love that about looking at the clothing designers to give you inspiration. Mm-hmm. All right. This has been a wealth of information and inspiration in my mind. Thank you, Darcy. One last thing, like tell our audience how they can find you. We will put it in the show notes, but I want to leave it to you to wrap up and tell us how. Yeah.
Let's just connect on Instagram at Darcy Benincosa. That's a very Italian name, but it's spelled exactly how it sounds. Benincosa. And if you just DM me the word submit, we'll get you all the things set up too. So you'll really understand how to get your work published and seen. And I think the most important thing is the portfolio that you're showing online. I wish somebody would have told me you're only as good as your worst image out there.
Oh, yeah.
So be really selective what you decide to show and don't just throw everything out there. It will come back to haunt you. Google doesn't go away. So be really selective.
This has been amazing. I really, really want to thank you for coming on our podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.